Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Good morning. It's a soon to be wet spring morning here, and we're talking about a topic that I think we know a little bit about.
We're kind of members.
we're talking about groups that that maybe you belong to, but if you do belong to, you probably don't think that it is this.
You definitely don't.
Because if you did, it's got negative connotations. Mm-hmm. People don't like to say that they are a member of a cult.
Cults. But what there is a phrase, though, that you could put in place of it, and it is the same thing, and that would be a mass movement or a social movement, which was really the original definition. But cults is the popular one with the negative connotations.
Yeah, I like giving it a different label and stripping away.
Well, if I'm talking about me and the one I'm in, then hell yeah, I'm not.
It's definitely
it a
mass movement.
It's just a mass movement.
And it's just like-minded individuals who are correct.
Who are right that it's us versus them.
And everyone else is wrong.
That's right.
That's it.
You'll hear about what cult we are members of, or jokingly,
yeah,
tangentially, yeah, related to.
So we usually start with the definition. So I found one, and it says, it is a misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person, thing, or subject.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. And the other one that I found I didn't like as much because it has religion in the definition, and I don't think that's necessarily true, and we can explore that. This one says, a relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister. Yeah. See, I disagree with that. That was actually from the Oxford Dictionary, too.
Well, you know, they're English over there. Everything has to be done by the book, tradition, rules, mannerisms, politeness.
Right.
Well, there's some words in those definitions that stick out to me. Misplaced. That's misfit. Excessive admiration or devotion. Those are negative things, typically. Read the first one again.
A misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person, thing, and I added something in there. But anyway, yeah.
Read the second one. You had another one in there. There was one more word I can't
think. A relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange.
There it is. Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Sinister.
Strange, sinister. So a couple of things. Small in number. So a cult, it can't be the majority. By definition, it has to be a small number of people. There's some pure devotion to an idea, to a person, to an object, to a process. It's excessive, according to the mainstream, right? It's weird, it's odd, it's misplaced. To me, it's just not mainstream. But what is any cult, whether it's religious or not, trying to achieve at an abstract level in one word? What do you think?
Control.
Ooh, interesting. But sure, yes, probably at the root core. I like that. But how is it framed?
Oh,
you could have one word for it.
Enlightenment.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, utopia.
Utopia.
Promised land, yeah. Right? Yeah. But yes, at the center, it's the control for those that control the narrative of the cult. But that doesn't get talked about.
Right. But no, yes, you're right. Utopia and enlightenment is, you know, we know. We're the ones with the knowledge. We're the ones who are better.
Right.
Good thing you're in the group that's in the know. Yeah. Or else you'd be one of them who's inferior.
Well, everything – let's go academic-y, philosophical a little bit. Everything we do as humans, both in terms of our actions and our communication – so not our thoughts, but actions, communication – external facing things, creates a sense of identification and differentiation at the same time. It's always occurring. And there's a really famous guy named Kenneth Burke that wrote a lot about this. So everything we do and say, whether we like it or not, we're attributing our identification to other things, and we're saying we're not like these other things over here. And I think what cults do is they just put that out front as the, you know, the Memorial Day sale. This is how we're working. You either identify with us in these ways or you're evil. You're them. You're the other. I think they just make that process, which operates in the background of human behavior, they bring it to the foreground and make it very explicit.
And I think that they exploit certain bases of human nature in order to achieve their goals, right? So exactly what you said there is people are always looking to identify with something and to differentiate themselves, to say, I'm not a part of this, I am a part of that. Humans have a need of belonging, right? Like we've always talked about how I think at our core, we're still tribal. We're still carrying that along with us. We've talked about how, like, you identify with a certain sports team, and then you go wear that sports team everywhere. And, you know, for some unknown reason, you get joy when that sports team wins and a different one loses, right? Because you're at a sports bar with your people. You know, this is a, you know, I remember when we lived in Denver, there were certain sports bars, because there were so many transplants, that fans of certain teams would visit those. And those bars might even identify themselves with that sports team's logo in the window. And so we knew if we wanted to go to Uptown Tavern during the playoffs, if we wanted to be with a bunch of Cardinals fans. And it was a different atmosphere, right? Being surrounded by those who were rooting with you. Mm-hmm. You knew these are your people. You know, I was hugging strangers. I had no idea who this guy was, but somebody hit a home run and we high-fived and hugged. And it was, it was a communal bonding experience because we were part of a tribe. I think humans naturally want that, and cults prey on that.
The number one need humans have outside of physiological is belonging. And so that's what sports allow for, or Twitter for people that are more behind the screen or analytically minded and aren't into like a social gathering type experiences. But yeah, cults prey on the belongingness. Doubt decreases when you're in a group. So doubt and analytic ability decreases whenever you're in a group setting. And it doesn't need to be a cult. It can be you go listen to a speech. Your analytical, rational mind goes down. System 2 thinking and System 1 thinking increases. You know, emotional response, automatic thinking, triggers, things like that. And so people that start cults or mass movements, they are either very consciously aware of that, or they just naturally figure that stuff out and build that, bake that in.
There's also something that's positive emotionally when you're experiencing a repressed system to analytical thinking and an increased emotion one thinking. Because, well, I suppose if your thoughts are in line with the subject matter that's being presented, and maybe the opposite if you're listening to someone espouse opposing views to what you talk about. I'd love to see some research on that. Like, if someone is preaching ideas that are counter to your beliefs and you're watching it, you're experiencing negative emotion. Are you also then trying to rationally break it down and justify to yourself why it's wrong via the system too? You know what I'm saying? Or because I guess what I'm trying to say is when you go, let's say you watch a TED talk and it's on a topic that you're very sympathetic to, and you know you agree with it as soon as you read the title. And then as the speaker starts talking, they're saying things that you already believed. And they're giving examples why that you hadn't thought of. So they're just bolstering your opinion, and it feels good. There's like a high that you get.
But yeah, the chemicals are releasing. You're feeling, I'm right.
Yes. Yes, I knew it.
I'm right.
All the time. I was right. I knew it. Right? And so you're getting like this excitement, this adrenaline hit, probably some dopamine and some other good feelings are flowing. So it's a self-enforcing thing to seek that out. Right? You were talking about the mechanics of it with System 1 and System 2 thinking. And so to me, I was thinking, oh yeah, clearly you get good emotion when you're hearing stuff that you agree with. But I also know you get bad emotion with stuff that you disagree with.
But yeah, yeah. But now I would say when you were talking through that, now as the person analyzing and breaking that stuff down while they're hearing it, I would say you would be, because that's how your mind works. But you're a weirdo. You're a fucking weirdo. You know, you have the ability to do that very quickly in the moment. Most people don't. And you're very skilled at metaphorical thinking. So you can break things down and then you're able to grab a metaphor and throw it back to be like, well, here's how I see it working. And that's a, just, I think you had that as a natural talent, but you've also put in the time to build it into a really nice skill. But I think you're wrong if you, and you weren't saying this, but if you were, you're wrong that that's how most people do it. Because it ain't. Most people hear that different thought and they shut the fuck down. They don't, they're done listening. There's no listening going on. There's no analysis. Oh, that word, nope. Different. They're wrong. They're on the other side. They're evil. That's what happens.
So then it goes into the fight or flight type thing. Like they just want to get away probably.
At least mentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Man, this is cool. This is a fun one. So here's a couple things I've jotted down. So we talked about craving belonging. We all do. Even introverted folks who don't enjoy social, in-person social settings, look at how much they need to belong. Twitter, Clubhouse, all these things online where we have to gather virtually, build virtual worlds to belong and be together because I don't want to do it in person. Humans need fucking belonging so much. Even when we don't want to actually do it in person, we have to create new virtual worlds to do it.
I know.
That's crazy.
I know. And I always say this, and people look at me skeptically, but I believe it to my core. The root of all the technology we build is to connect ourselves better. What is the internet? It's just a better way to connect. They just connected all the knowledge that we have.
Yeah.
All together.
And when you have a lot of connections, there's going to be a lot of noise. And it's up to you to find the signal. And that's really tough. Oh, well, you read it on the internet. Oh, great. Yeah, that's truth. It's just like, okay, you're going to poo-poo the whole internet.
Right.
But I was thinking with those virtual worlds, once people are really living in, more in a truly virtual world, I think we're kind of taking stair steps there. Then there's going to be virtual cults.
There already are. I mean, here's the thing. I think that real cults in the real world can recruit and begin the seeds of whatever it is that they're trying to implant virtually. And now, especially with this new pandemic world, with the increasing technology that we have around video calls, and with AR, it's going to get even better to where you feel like you're in the room with someone, even if you're not. You're going to be able to have these meetups, right? Of like-minded individuals, however you want to put it, mass movement meetups, where in the real, I think in the past it's been, let's just talk about the evolution of technology now that we're on that subject. In the past it had been, oh, there's this newsletter that gets sent out and you can put your name on the newsletter if you meet someone who clues you in that this thing exists and it gets sent out and then you're a part of that newsletter group. Then it became, they used to have these things, bulletin boards, where you would dial into a computer and it would have certain subjects and topic and stuff. And then people became aware of that and would get it that way. Then the internet, right? And that's how people would get it. But it's always been this communication being sent out to try to send a similar message to people who are susceptible to hearing that message and become part of the group. The technology has just become more and more efficient at doing so. And it's been more, you've been better able as a receiver to receive that message that you want to receive. I feel like if you listen to the old stories of like cult mass movements, right? It's always, or it oftentimes seems that the people who ended up receiving the message and joining the cult did so through some chance, some coincidence, some happenstance. And I'm not to say that it's not still that way today. It certainly is. But I think oftentimes there's more seeking that's happening on the receiver's side.
More opportunities to seek.
There's opportunity. Yeah. And there's more tools for which to seek what you're looking for. And so I think it's interesting because we're touching on something that I was going to go towards, which is I think that any mass movement, they happen in like waves. And those waves happen to me based on need, right? Based on the need to belong.
Or at least, yeah, need or perceived need.
Perceived need, yeah. So anytime you have like more – anytime you can get a group of people who feel that they don't have purpose, that they don't have belonging, right? Those are – they're primed. They're ready to go. If you can get your message to them, they will join you. And so you can see like mass movements in the past happen based on time, age, like generational, like young adults and having need at certain times in life, these things just naturally occur. And you see mass movements happen in waves based on that.
Yeah. No, I like that. That makes sense. Three things at the, for me, at the core of a cult or a social movement, and then we'll start talking about probably some, or I've got a list of some kind of famous ones. Then we can talk about, obviously talk about the one that we are in, or people could suggest that
sure.
we're in.
Sure.
For me, there's three core features though. It increases the sense of belonging to something. It reduces barrenness. It reduces that feeling of internal directionlessness, anxiety. What's my purpose or place in the world? So I like the word barrenness. And then to go to your boy, Viktor Frankl, it helps somebody capture meaning. Now, what meaning they're capturing? Well, that's to be debated. But that's, to me, what a cult does, and it just does it in a – if it takes off, it does it in a very effective way because they've been with humans throughout time. Like, it's a very effective tool. But I don't believe – somebody like a Jim Jones or who, you know, Jonestown, drink the Kool-Aid is where that phrase come from. He literally persuaded thousands of people to drink poisoned Kool-Aid and kill themselves to get to the promise. Like, and we hear that and we put it off. There's a documentary where you should watch if you're interested in cults that follows him and his group around down there in South America. I mean, it is wild. Like, I don't believe that people that founded cults or social movements, they wouldn't call it a cult. They're the real deal. They're the true believer, as Eric Hoffer says. And if you're interested in what cults or social movements are about or how to build one and or how to not be persuaded by one, read Eric Hoffer's book, The True Believer, from 1951. Anyone that's writing about cults today is either stealing him directly or indirectly. But it's just really interesting because the creator of a religion or a cult, they are the true believer. They have that feeling of it's a religious, spiritual experience for them. And then they create rituals and actions to try to replicate that with their followers. And people see that and they connect to that energy and they want that meaning and that belongingness to what that person's having. And it just gets exploited over time. And then it becomes a tool of control at some point, as you said.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. You know, as we were doing our research onto this topic, it focused on that situation particularly. Mm-hmm. So, and it talked about some tactics, right? So it talked about the need side, so why people would join, but then it talked about tactics that a leader of a cult would use to exploit.
Give me some you got. I got a list too.
All right. So one of them is promises, right? Mm-hmm. So comfort and promises. These things can include financial security, health, total health, constant peace of mind, or eternal life, mm-hmm. right? All those things can be promised. And those promises are huge when it comes
to
promises.
They're abstract.
Right.
There's usually not a lot of very detailed information behind them.
They're definitely not measuring and reporting on your results.
And one of the key things that I came across for tactics, again, let's say you want to go create a cult. And it's going to be a positive cult. It's not going to be a negative
sure.
one, right? Keep all your messages vague and simple. Use words that allow people to fill in the blanks. Use fancy titles for simple things. Use new words for vague concepts. Think about anything that you might label a cult and do an honest analysis. Using language and labeling is all about framing things for people and creating that power. And man, they're really good at that. And people want to belong. They want to believe. They want to believe.
They do. And it's interesting because the thing that you said about like new terms, vague terms, stuff like that goes in contrast to the second one. But I think they use those vague terms when they're trying to give this, which is solid answers, right? So a lot of people join cults because they're getting solid answers for things that that, you know, like the meaning of life, or, you know, what do I believe when it comes to politics or religion, stuff like that, right? Generally, cults give them a – it's not wishy-washy. You know, we were talking about what is true. We were talking about our cult, and I said, you know, I know deep down the truth is probably somewhere between what the evangelists of our movement say and what the antithesists, the antagonists say. I know the truth is probably somewhere in between.
Right.
Right. But the whole point of a cult is to give the one true, like you said, true believer, the one true answer, right? It's no, it's this is right and that is wrong. And people look for that. People don't want – it's so amazing. Anytime we talk about any like subject with people and we're out at a party or whatever and I'm listening to them, there is no happy medium with people, you know? Like Aristotle would be – his mind would be blown listening to the way that people talk about stuff because – you know, he taught about moderation and, mm-hmm. and the truth always being somewhere in between. And nobody seems to naturally go there. It's like you have to force yourself to to remember that.
But I would say in a cult, though, truth is secondary. It's the experience they're trying to create for folks that's primary. The identification with the movement. Let's not dig too deep on certain things. Don't ask too many questions about this. But if people do, and again, I'm saying the cult or the movement has taken off to a degree, has a following, if you will, and then people start asking about the prophet or the founder, and wait a second, this is contradictory here. That gets swept up with the zest of the masses.
That's true.
People self-police and peer-police that stuff to keep you focused on the vague and simple promises that will lead to utopia.
And I think that goes back to the answer. It's like, right. Look, man, we already gave you the answer.
Right. To me, it's not contradictory. To me, it's the same.
Right. We gave you the answer. Why are you digging into why it's the answer? It's the answer, man.
Here's another one. Emphasize the visual and the sensual over the intellectual. Appeal to as many senses as possible and minimize analysis. Smells, dance rituals, certain types of cults, that's why they bring in drugs to alter people's perceptions, getting up and doing movements, creating physical rituals that you have to do with your body, eating certain things.
I like the rituals thing. This one talks about brainwashing through repetition.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's experience, shared experience and repetition can get you to really just start to believe something at its core, right? So you can repeat these things. Answers, phrases, experiences, rituals. That's what rituals are.
Right. Here's a few, and you might think of modern organizational structures that follow this. Create a hierarchy with titles. Create progression tracks so that there's a clear path for people to follow and progress through the movement. Use rituals. Hold people accountable. Sacrifice the lamb. Kick someone out ever so often. They're the non-believer. This is one of the most important ones. Require sacrifice.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because the more we – this is psychology. The more we sacrifice something that we enjoy towards a goal we're trying to pursue, the more importance we place on that goal.
Sunk cost.
Yes.
Opportunity cost, right? So it's just like anything in your life where you've dedicated time, effort, resources toward achieving it, you're then less likely to give up on it because you say, look at all this stuff I've done to do this. Like, I'm not going to give up on it now. If you're ever going to give up on something, it's right in the beginning when you're just dipping your toe in the water, right? That totally makes sense.
Disguise your income source if you're the founder. So you talk about financial. All these folks that run these things, they never talk about the money that they have. But also, at least for like Jim Jones, he was in the trenches with those folks, literally living in the jungle. So if he had money through it, he wasn't out spending it. But there's other cults, the leaders clearly are exploiting their members financially, and it's more like kind of Ponzi scheme at that point, or like MLM, multi-level marketing type stuff.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because, like you said, there's the cults run the gamut when it comes to financials. You've got people who live with their people, like the David Koresh's, and then you've got people who live in a palace, a crystal palace, because you know their whatever belief wants them to be prosperous.
Right. Well, they want, here's another one. Be accessible, but present rare knowledge. Carve out sacred times where the prophet is always unavailable to anyone.
That's good.
Yeah, there's so many fun things you could do. The key one you meant, we've talked about, us versus them dynamic. That's not just for cults, folks. That's for any kind of collective you're trying to build. If you don't have somebody else or a concept or a thing, another company you're trying to go against, the people in yours won't bond as closely or effectively as they can.
Yeah, you have to have a shared
nature.
Enemy. Shared
it's
enemy.
Good versus – there's two main narratives that we have as humans, good versus evil – humans versus gods.
Yep.
And gods can be systems or gods can be our goals. And so if you don't have an enemy, invent one. Straw men are very helpful.
It's so crazy because, you know, my analytical mind and this whole like good versus evil thing, I've broken it down. And so far as I can tell, good versus evil, it depends on the eye of the beholder. It's all on the eye of the beholder, right? So you watch a nature video and a lion catches an antelope, right, and eats it. If you're an antelope watching that, that is evil. That is awful. It was the most terrible thing you could ever see. Somebody's family member. You knew them.
You wouldn't be a good cult member, dude.
If you're a lion, if you're a lion watching that, that is awesome. That is a bounty for the pride. We now get to share in a meal together.
You're the person getting kicked out of Scientology, making the Netflix documentary because you think too much.
Yeah, I know. But the human narrative is not that at all. It's good is everything that we want, everything that we associate with, whatever our message is, that's the good. Evil is chaos, is everything against it. Anything that threatens what we are saying. Evil has impure intentions, and we make up imagery around it to strengthen it and say things about demons and angels, and you know, it even becomes mystical and magical.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, cults, that is it. That is at the center of what cults. Are you evil? Why do you hate
yeah,
good?
It's good. It's us versus them. It's always good versus evil. And it doesn't have to be said. It's just implied,
right? Oh, and it's awesome because there's in these various mind control activities, one of the things that they do is they look at like self-incrimination. So they make you provide them with some mistakes you've made in the past or things that you've done bad to in order to sense like stoke a sense of guilt. And now you have to make up for these things that you've done wrong, right? This evil inside of you. You have to fix the evil in you.
Yeah, like sin. Original sin.
Like original sin. Yep. Exactly.
A couple other things, and this is from that Eric Hoffer book, The True Believer. Many people join a true cult, and usually the ones kind of with the negative connotations, not the ones on the fringes that, oh, I can make an argument that this is a cult. One where a mainstream of majority of people on the bell curve in the middle would look at this group and be like, yeah, they're a cult, and not in a good way. A lot of their followers join to escape freedom. Freedom is what scares them because choice implies responsibility. So they want to join a movement where they don't have responsibility, where they can give that responsibility and sacrifice their personal sense of freedom and choice to just be one of the masses in the movement.
I love that one.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just looking for that.
Yeah. And is that bad? You know, for some folks that are weirdos and wired like me, I don't like that. I don't like to be one of the masses and, you know, whatever. That's just my psychology. I want to be remembered, whatever, be unique, have legacy. But other people want to contribute and just be a widget in the machine and not
be
the leader.
It's so interesting because I see both of those in me, right? Obviously, I decide to lead in certain situations. But also, sometimes I'm just, you make the decisions. I'm happy, right? Like, what are we having for dinner? I don't know. You decide. I don't care. We'll see if I like it or not. There's something that is seductive about that, about not having to put the effort forth and instead to just follow.
Yeah, following is effortless.
Yeah,
or not always effort. I take that back. There's less effort. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I see that in myself. And so I recognize why there can people who would be eat way more of that than me, you know, who just naturally are like, look, I don't want to have to make the decisions and take on the responsibility of success or failure on behalf of this entire group and then face the music if what I do is unsuccessful. I would rather just go along with something I agree with and put that on somebody else. That totally makes sense.
To me, that ties into another key point. Failure amplifies the feeling of not belonging. So if you give up personal responsibility and individualism and individual goal achievement and put the group's goals, you can't fail. That's You're just right. part of the movement. You're part of the group. And if you do fail, it's a collective. We fail together.
Right. That's right.
And if, as we've talked about, humans crave belonging. So for folks who just, for whatever reason, feel that they can't get it together to achieve or pursue the things they want, they might be, or Hoffer says that they're more susceptible to joining a cult-like movement to try to achieve goals collectively so that they don't have that sense of failure, which amplifies their sense of not belonging.
I thought that
stuck out to me.
That one's really seductive. That one's really, you know, like, it's like, well, we have belonging. We have a need for belonging, you know, for all these reasons. Yes, that's true. But, you know, it's almost like a safety mechanism.
Yeah.
Right.
So it is.
If we think about, we always talk about evolutionary psychology. It's like once you're a part of a group, your chances of getting a hunt are greater.
Right.
Because there's more likely somebody's going to
power in numbers,
going to get something. And your chances of safety, if you get attacked or something, are better, right? Now, you know, we can talk about the trade-offs of that, right? So, like, your highs would be higher if you weren't part of a group, and your lows would be lower on both sides of the house, right? Like, you get something on your own, it's all yours. You don't got to share it, you know? Or, you know, if you get attacked, you're dead. That's it.
Yep.
You know, instead of losing members of the group. But as a whole, there's something that's very seductive about belonging, I think, for that reason. Like, it's been drilled into us that there's safety as part of a group and there's increased chances of success as part of a group.
Yeah. Let's let the audience into what people could argue that we're members, what cult we're members of.
Well, clearly it's Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin.
Crypto in general, but specifically Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if you go through in an analytical way, wow, look at that squirrel right here. He's climbing the bush. It's awesome. I don't know if you can see him. No. You take an official definition of a term like cults or social movement, and then you apply that to something to analyze and make an argument if it is. All right. Well, does Bitcoin Twitter, right, the folks doing and believing in that, do we believe what we're pursuing is good and right and a better system? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do people on Twitter keep the message vague and simple? Yeah. Oh. That's meme culture, folks.
Yeah.
Meme culture is cult on steroids, emphasizing visual and sensual over intellectual. Again, Twitter culture, meme culture.
Yeah, they make these pictures of stuff and yeah.
Requiring sacrifice, right? That's really the idea of libertarian economics.
Yeah.
Invest now for the future. HODL.
Get rid of your useless fiat.
Yeah. The one thing that always cracks me up for the old school Bitcoiners or crypto folks, they're like, oh, you sold some? Idiot. Oh, you sold some? It's just like, what's the point of all of it then? If you're just going to accumulate this stuff forever in perpetuity and never do anything with it, what's the point?
And the whole idea...
It's silly.
The whole idea, right? So, like, if you're asking me, like, well, what's break it down for me. What's the idea behind the movement? For me, it's we're on an inflationary monetary system, right? And this is why this is relative to Bitcoin in general. There are a whole lot more things. We could talk for hours about this. The two big ideas for me, number one is that blockchain is an immutable ledger, right? And it is decentralized and you can't mess with it. So it doesn't lie. It gets consensus from nodes around the world. And the information all has to match up and you can't mess with it. No one person can take control over it. I mean, as long as it's decentralized enough, and some other time we'll talk about that. But the whole idea with Bitcoin in particular, as it relates on the blockchain, is so important to me because the system that we're on now is inflationary. So over time, your ability to buy things gets less and less over time. And the idea with Bitcoin is the opposite, mm-hmm. is that it's a deflationary monetary system where over time, your ability to purchase things gets more and more over time because there are only so many Bitcoin that will ever be created. And obviously, there will always be more goods and services and people. And so therefore, one Bitcoin will be fighting for against less other Bitcoin for an right. increasing amount of goods and services and people. So that's deflationary.
Yeah.
And then now you get into, okay, well, why is that better, right? Isn't deflation bad? And then you talk for hours about
that. Yeah, there's a lot of technical shit. To right. me, though, getting back to the cult, us versus them.
Oh.
It's totally good versus evil.
Here's the thing. When I explain this stuff to people, I try to explain it in like rational terms. But you look at like Bitcoin Twitter – and it's
your brother.
I mean, the terms and the memes. Just saying
fiat.
You know what's great?
We use the term fiat to put down the entire system, in that one word.
The existing monetary system, right? So the U.S. dollar or the euro or whatever.
When we say fiat or petrodollars, that's just trying to put it all down.
Yeah, they say fiat money, and basically,
which means by decree.
And they're pointing out the fact that this money doesn't have anything backing it, and that it's going to be inflated away. Right. It's purchasing power.
The Federal Reserve
has a whole bunch of meaning.
Yep.
In one word.
That's meme culture. The meme is the message.
The same thing with the term HODL.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Which is funny, the origin story of.
Yeah.
But basically, some guy was on a drunk rant about his Bitcoin went down in value, but he doesn't care. He's never going to sell it. He's just going to HODL. And he made a spelling mistake.
Instead of saying hold, he wrote HODL. And then for a while, it meant holding on for dear life. And now it's just HODL. It just means you're in it for the long term.
Yeah. And people, you know.
Here's something, though. Yeah. Most cults traditionally, according to the definition, have a founder.
Ooh.
Bitcoin's founder is anonymous, which even plays into
this is
more
even
mystery, right? Yeah. And then the white paper, the constitution, if you will, the Bible of Bitcoin, the 8-page white paper that will change the world forever, and it might. But just the reverence with which people talk about it, and I've put my money where my mouth is. I believe those things, but I can also step back and look at how ridiculous it looks to outsiders. I mean, people look like a bunch of fucking crazies out there. They've got to.
It is ridiculous, but it's also the coolest way that it could have happened.
It's a $1 trillion asset with no founder and all these believers. And then when people
there is a founder. But he's just like a messiah character. Satoshi Nakamoto.
Or a group of founders.
Right? Yeah.
But it's funny when critics are like, it's like a religion. To me, there couldn't be a better compliment. You're saying that a group of people who believe in a concept that was created by someone that no one knows took it from being worthless to worth over $1 trillion in 10 years and no other assets ever done that? Okay. Yeah, those people are true believers, and we've been able to spread that message.
Oh, we were just talking about something yesterday that I think applies to this perfectly, okay? And I think this can go back to cults, the cult of personality.
Cult of personality.
We were sitting with family, and we were talking about like marketing and branding and as it relates to sports, and it was brought up that Kobe's estate tried to get a lifetime contract with Nike. And I guess Nike has done that with LeBron James and Tiger Woods, and they refused to do it with Kobe post-mortem. I guess it would have been for like whatever his term of his natural life would have been, or yada, yada, yada. And so the family left Nike, right? Hmm. And then there was discussion about whether that was a good or bad idea. And I thought, that's a strange decision, because if I'm Nike, I want Kobe way more than I want Tiger Woods or LeBron James.
Because he's no longer with us.
Or even Jordan. And here's why. Because Jordan's best stuff has already happened. And now his image can only get older and more overweight and less athletic, because that's what you become as you get older. Kobe will always be
in his prime.
In his prime, because
at the peak pinnacle when he tops.
It's just like when a rock star dies when they're young.
Like Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison.
Yep. Yeah. Like they become mythical, right?
Legends.
There's no chance for them to become the old fat Elvis.
Yeah. Seinfeld, the Beatles, going out when you're number one.
You go out on top, you die on top, and then you've got this. That's the last image that the world is left with.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so that's where I am trying to tie this back to, is like, it's better to have a mythical image, right? It's almost like an idea of someone is better than the person themselves.
Well, because the person themselves comes with
baggage
and problems.
Makes mistakes, yada, yada, right? And so this is perfect. Like, a great cult in my opinion, the less tangible the leader is, the better.
Right.
Right? So one of the best things about Christianity. It's one of the best things about Christianity. It's like only good things can be said and attributed to Jesus because he's not a human. He's not fallible. If he was still around, he would be scrutinized to the nth degree and figure out negative things that were going on. But you can't, right? So, I think that that's one of the downfalls of some of the more modern religions, right? With Scientology, you've got L. Ron Hubbard, and there's modern media of him and his writings and everything. He's really a tangible dude, and everybody realized he was just a person. And I think that's probably one of the big weaknesses. You can always point to that and be right. Like, look, you're founded on this.
Yeah.
Right? And they have to try to overcome that. But a good cult can have this mythical legend of a leader that only has good attributes.
And that's what makes Bitcoin a great cult.
Exactly.
And the numbers show it.
Exactly.
What about other cults? I started to think about, can you create your family into a cult?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can come up with shared beliefs that are a part of your family that are, you know, somewhat unique and somewhat against the grain.
So you got small number, pure devotion to your goals or your values, excessive admiration and attention to them. They can be unique or odd, not mainstream, and you're promising truth or utopia. So yeah. I would assume that small family. And your goal isn't even to grow your movement, but just for your family. Okay.
Yeah. Us versus them. Yeah.
Have we been members of any other cults, me and you? I have two thoughts that maybe we could make an argument for.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which one are you thinking?
One we fell for was a multi-level marketing.
Yes. Excel. So I had that. And then can you think of any others? Although a big argument would be this is more mainstream. Fraternities.
Oh, that's
but again,
a good
one. That's more mainstream, so that's not that odd, right? So they're not cult, but they're clearly a lot of these characteristics are part of
they
that.
Can be very cult-like.
Oh yeah, hazing. Oh, hazing is a powerful psychological tool that includes belonging, sacrifice, and us versus them all in one little ritual.
Yeah,
depending on what you do.
You know what? It's funny because it's like, oh, you need to defend yourself if you admit that you were part of a cult or whatever. I knew what I wanted out of my fraternity life.
Go get drunk and have
fun
at parties.
I knew what it was, and it was, and that's what it was for me. But I think I wouldn't have known that, maybe, if that was my first experience with anything like that, right? Luckily, I had fallen for other stupid shit in the past.
Yeah, talk a little bit about Excel, kind of our first cult.
Oh, man.
First, explain MLMs for folks.
So multi-level marketing schemes, scams, whatever you want to call them, cults.
Organizations. They're legal.
Yeah, they're organizations. And it's actually kind of a tempting way if you're trying to run a business because you get people to do stupid stuff
work for you.
Yeah, everybody works their ass off for you and you get all the money. It's you know, they call them pyramid schemes too. And I like that because it gives a good visualization. And the way that they work is that the people at the top really benefit from the work that people underneath them do, and they structure the business in a way where your job is twofold. It's number one, to sell on their behalf, so bring in money to the organization in exchange for whatever it is you're peddling. And that actually doesn't even matter.
And we were like peddling long – this was pre-cell phones. We were peddling
– long-distance phone service.
Affordable long-distance phone service.
It was cheaper.
But it was. The product was actually legit.
It was actually –
they just chose they didn't want to work hard, it seems like, right, and build an actual legit organization.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to look up if they're still around.
Yeah. And so then, you know, we were told about how much money we were going to make, right?
We were kids. Tell them how they found us.
Oh, we were kids. We were like teenagers going into Borders, drinking
Borders
our coffee.
Bookstore.
Reading magazines and whatnot.
Was it Darnell?
Darnell. He saw us and he realized we were these young, hungry guys who would do some good work and obviously would wanted money, right? And so first thing, starts talking to us about, oh yeah, you guys work, you guys have jobs, you work, yeah, what do you make an hour? $4.75 an hour.
Super friendly. He was a solid persuader,
really,
and influencer.
Good persuader.
That was his role.
Oh man, I remember one of his lines that was so good. He's like you know you take girls out on dates now, right, guys? Like, it's hard to pay for. You know, he's like, man, if you want to take them out to somewhere that's, you know, like really worth going to, you gotta spend $100 on dinner, you know. And he's like, and man, just for a young guy, it's really hard to get that. He's like, I'm so lucky. I found Excel. I'm you know, very fortunate. I can do that whenever I want. As a matter of fact, I've got a Range Rover with a complete custom sound system and everything, and it's just all from my Excel earnings. Yeah. I could tell you guys about it. You guys want to learn a little bit more? I mean, because I think you guys, you guys would be successful in this. I just know you would.
Man.
So good. He was a good pitch. He was a good pitch man. So yeah, he literally took us out to the parking lot, showed us his Range Rover, you know, got in, put on the sound system. Beautiful, beautiful car. And then that actually even got ramped up.
They took us to some rich dude's house.
Yeah.
How the hell did our parents let us do this? Did they meet our parents? Met our parents.
We were like, we were more than 16 by then, right? Weren't we?
I couldn't drive.
Oh, you couldn't drive?
No.
Maybe I was 16.
You were the driver.
Okay, so we were probably either way, right at 16.
They applied all this shit. The not as much the us versus them, but the vague and simple promises, emphasizing the visual.
Oh, you're going to get rich.
That and just the dumb slide decks they'd show us, how simplified they were with no data in them. Mm-hmm. But the pyramid scheme, we never asked, we were kids, how does the money situation work? Oh, it flows up the pyramid, not down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I mean.
But they were good.
It was good. It was good. And it was our first lesson. I think it was a good.
Oh, it's a
it was
great a
good, lesson. It was a good business lesson. And I remember our parents saying exactly that.
Yeah, they gave us money to join because you have to pay to join this company.
Of course. What kind of job have you ever been hired to that you didn't have to pay to get the job? And, and yeah, so we joined, and then, you know, I remember our parents being, they'd seen it before, so they were skeptical, and they were like, all right, guys, here's the deal. We'll pay for you to join it because we think this will be worth it for you to learn this lesson, this business lesson. And it was.
Yeah.
Totally was.
Absolutely. It was very good.
But man, you want to talk about a cult. They had like really great video material. They had conferences together where they got everybody pumped up.
Progression tracks, titles, everybody, the rah, rah, rah.
Clearly these small meetups where they would bring everyone in a region to who, you know, the rich person's house in that region, whoever had done the best. And, you know, show them all this opulence and how they could achieve it if they just sold some long-distance phone service.
Mm, yeah.
Which, side note, it's amazing how hard it is to get people to switch their phone service, even if it's minutely cheaper. Like, dude, it's cheaper. You could save a couple cents a minute on your long-distance.
It's just it's one of those bureaucratic – it's like insurance.
Yeah,
it's just like a commodity. They don't want to waste the time.
Get out of here. Yeah.
So we've got some I'd say we are – cult amateurs here that you're listening to. So we've got some expertise there.
Yeah, we might want to start our own. Now that we've got this little bit amount of experience, I've got to get some good ideas on how we could
so it's easy to look at like a Jim Jones, Jonestown. You know, we talked a little bit about how Bitcoin, ISIS, you can make arguments
for that type of stuff
with violence.
Yeah.
People could make arguments. I'm not saying they are, but the whole Trump phenomenon his group, Black Lives Matter. I'm sure somebody could make arguments about that.
I think that right now we're seeing waves of this, and I think it's because of a lack of meaning, a lack of belonging. You know, you've got the highest unemployment rate ever. You've got, you know, government stimulus checks going out, so people are just – you know, they're looking for something to do. They don't have to go drive Uber. They've got all this time on their hands now. What is it that I'm going to get myself into, right? And so you've got messages being blasted out via this newfound recruitment tool, you know, the internet. And you've got people who are seeking stuff out all the time via YouTube and Instagram and TikTok and Clubhouse. There's even new ones coming out all the time. To get with your like-minded people and talk about the ideas that you guys share.
The Human Gathering approached me.
Yes.
And I went through this whole little application process to see what it was like. Definitely, Colt, definitely. And they just dropped off at some point and quit answering emails.
Well, there you go.
But yeah, it's to me, they're all around us, and these things occur in cycles.
Would you say Theranos was a cult? I would say yes.
Well, yeah, of course.
I would say it
was a legal business cult.
Yeah.
But it was based on a total lie.
You know, that's interesting because when you say cults, oftentimes you think about religion.
Right. But the business there was religion.
I think business in general could be a cult.
Just the I'm a businessman. I'm a busy businessman.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
How does the word culture relate to cult? Because you talk about like, oh, we've got to build our culture. We've got to get. What do you mean? Well, we want people to be bought in. We want people to you know, be
have share our worldview. Yeah. Organizational culture is our worldview, what we do, the core of us,
yeah. How we're making the world better, how it's better to be with us than not. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely some cult like stuff in certain businesses. You know, I've been a part of I don't know how many organizations since I started my career in business, from both an actual employee of them and then now having clients. So I've got – and now, Zach, you work with tons of businesses. You've worked with every Fortune 500 company in St. Louis. Would you say that there are elements, right? It's not like they're actually – I would not define most businesses as cults. However, I would say that there are some that definitely have approached that status, you know.
Well, they want to approach that status with the positive things. They want the us versus them. They want the hierarchy with titles, progression tracks, rituals. Absolutely, they want sacrifice. They want to hold people accountable. Where some of the things they probably go different on are some of the tactics around communication. So like the vagueness, the simplicity, because businesses aren't they're not in the business of truth unless truth has dollars around
right.
it. So they're quite clear. Actually, no, they do a good job obfuscating the truth that we're here to serve and provide services and products. Really, you're turning a dollar. You're making a dollar. Now, that could be the outcome or the offshoot of your result. But
well, and it's so funny how they want certain information to be available, readily available, and then other information. Yeah, we don't discuss that.
Right. Transparency.
We don't discuss
issues.
That with your peers, like what you make. Right, they do not want you talking about the salary that you receive with your peers.
There's usually policies for that.
Yeah, it's just so. Yeah, it's interesting, but it's funny how we've just accepted that. Well, that's business, man. That's just the way
it
works.
That's just business. Yeah. So you got business, you got religion. I mean, you could do the same thing and say it with education, formal education and schooling. Like we've convinced ourselves that that's the only way we can learn as humans is through this very formal process. Somebody that was an educator for 15 years.
Even the subject matter that is taught, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there was something in our hometown that just came out that was a news story that, man, stoked a ton of emotion, right? Which was that they're changing the social studies curriculum, and it's now going to be an equity-based social studies curriculum. Oh, man, there was a poorly written business journal article, or maybe it was in
the
Post.
Well, it was incorrect, too.
Yeah. It could have been out of laziness or it could have been out of malintention. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But basically, it left out all the details about, well, what does that even mean? So then you get people in the comments who are on one side or the other.
Yeah. And then they're tying it to other very fringe projects out there and saying, oh, well, they're using these resources. And they're not. But how do you debunk that? You talk to people in the know and you ask questions about, well, what's the curriculum going to be?
So this episode's really evolved, and I think it's really interesting. I think what I would say is something that – an idea that I have that I want to go look into is, are we seeing more cult-like activity?
Yes, because in a seculum, which is a 100-year period, a long human life, there are really four seasons that occur. And we are at the end of the third one, according to a book called The Fourth Turning. And the third one's The Unraveling. And we are approaching crisis. And that can be going from fall to winter in terms of seasons. But in any unraveling, you see social movements and populism for politics ramp way up. And it ain't just what we got going on now. It's how it's always been. And there's many historical analyses on this. You can read for it yourself in the book called The Fourth Turning. But yes, one of the things that spring up are, they don't call them cults, but a variety of social movements. Again, influence across the vast population because of people's search for belonging, barrenness, self-doubt.
Everything
all
we talked
of that
about.
That stuff.
Yeah.
But it's cyclical, which is really interesting. And then when the crisis hits, which we don't need to talk about, whatever that is, economic, warfare, it doesn't – political – when that hits, those things tend to either dissipate or gain lots of power over the governmental apparatus. So the next 15 years, in Zach's opinion, are going to be real interesting.
And maybe that makes this episode really timely and important, right? So I'll use that as a change challenge, right? So one of the things that I'm going to do is, because I'm reading The Fourth Turning as well right now, is I'm going to challenge myself to look at where are there things that are social movements, mass movements, as Zach said, was used in what's that book?
The True Believer.
The True Believer uses the term mass movements instead of cults. So I'm going to challenge myself to identify where are there increasing signs of social movements and mass movements. And man, we just named how many of them. And it's like one pops up and then you get the antithesis of it, right? Like the thin blue line is the antithesis to the Black Lives Matter. Or I don't know. You get
right. Yeah. The symbols that people use, the little flags they put up for virtue signal.
Yeah. People are trying to identify with one and try to distance themselves from another. And it's just everywhere right now. So I think this is a really timely episode to look for elements of cults in everything that we see.
Right.
And try to at least understand. I'm not saying don't have an opinion. I'm not saying don't belong to groups.
Think
go ahead.
Think their tactics.
Yeah. But just be aware of what's going on and understand when certain tactics are being used on you. It'll probably make you a more balanced individual who's less susceptible to the negative impacts that can be brought about by a cult or a mass movement.
A huge one we didn't talk about. We talked about education, kind of business, the generalized cults, if you will. Fitness.
Oh, yeah.
CrossFit.
Yeah.
I mean, that I was a member of a box. Like, they go through all of this.
Dude. Oh,
it's
yeah.
exactly.
Oh,
it. Yeah. Now, whether they actually read the book, The True Believer, the guy that founded that, or not, they're following the script for how you build it. And it works. You've seen the growth.
Oh, it's totally worked.
So say your change challenge as concisely as possible, mainly so I can capture it. Okay. Write it down.
Start to inventory cult activity from varying groups in your life to make yourself aware of the cults that you either are consider yourself a part of or even just sympathetic to.
Nice.
Simple awareness exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. Mine would be just jump on the internet and type in cult tactics. I just found it very interesting and enlightening after I read The True Believer 2 years ago or whatnot, and then just started diving in. Okay, well, if I wanted to create, because you can make a cult very positive. Like, it doesn't always have to have the, and you wouldn't call it a cult at that point, of course. But you can use these tools, which are clearly very effective. They've been with humans for thousands of years. We use the same things over and over. We just sprinkle little technology on top of it today. But they work. So just go read about it. I found it was a fun exercise just seeing how we've used these same tools, and they've evolved and tweaked over time, but they're with us. So same thing, more of an awareness issue, but I think you'll start to see how non-cults, how mainstream organizations and group, all that is groups of people trying to achieve goals, how they use a lot of this stuff, and it's because it works.
Mm-hmm.
So do some research into cult tactics, how to create a cult. You could Google that.
And it's like anything. I don't think there's just anything that is – I mean, well, clearly there are things that are just definitely cults. You can just be like, yeah, that's a cult. But the question always is, well, where's the line between just a group that's trying to achieve a shared goal and a cult? And it's like anything. It's a spectrum.
No, yeah, there's no line. There's the line for the founder and the believers, and then a line for the people who aren't in the group. Right. And that line's going to differ.
Right. Some are more cult-like. Some are less cult-like. Nice. Interesting.
Well, thank you for listening. This has been a fun little conversation. Cults, people join them and want to be part of those social movements because they increase belonging, reduce barrenness, and create and capture meaning. It's usually a small group of folks who have pure devotion to a person, idea, or object, and it's not mainstream. They're promising some kind of utopia, and that's enticing. And that's why cults have always been with us, and they always will be as humans. So, as we like to say at Life Lab, be on the lookout for cults and experiment with life.